Hey everyone, welcome to the brand new episode of Astrophysica's podcast. This is Krishna Bulchandani.
This is Shweta.
And today we'll be talking about much awaited, the largest, the complex telescope ever built by human, which is the James Webb Space Telescope. I guess its journey from its proposal to finally being ready for launch has been quite a roller coaster ride. I personally am really excited for its launch. What about you, Shweta?
Oh yes, very true. Hopefully everything goes smoothly and we get to see this huge, amazing telescope, alive.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a bit about it?
So the James Webb Telescope, which is also, known as JWST in short, has taken about 30 years and $10 billion to develop, and it is being described as one of the grand scientific endeavors of the 21st century.
Exactly. So what is exactly the James Webb Space Telescope? So it is a large space-based observatory optimized for infrared wavelength, which will complement and extend the discovery of the Hubble Space Telescope. It will have longer wavelength coverage and greatly improve sensitivity. The longer wavelength enables Webb to look further back into time to find the first galaxy that formed an early universe and to peer inside the dust cloud where the stars and planetary systems are forming today.
Sounds amazing already. But did you know that the James Webb Space Telescope was originally supposed to be called the Next Generation Space Telescope, or in short, it's the NGST? But on the 10th September 2002, the NGST was renamed in honor of James E. Webb, who is NASA's second administrator. So Webb is best known for leading Apollo, which is a series of lunar exploration programs that landed the first humans on the moon.
Wow. And you guys might be wondering, how will this be better than the Hubble Space Telescope? So Webb is designed to look deeper into space to see the earliest stars and galaxies that formed in a universe, and to look deep into nearby dust cloud to study the formation of stars and planets. In order to do this, Webb will have a much larger primary mirror than Hubble, around 2.7 times larger in diameter, or about 6 times larger in area, giving it more light gathering power. It will also have infrared instrument with longer wavelength coverage and greatly improved sensitivity than Hubble. And finally, Webb will operate much farther from Earth, maintaining its extremely cold operating temperature, stable pointing, and higher observing efficiency than with the Earth orbiting Hubble telescope.
Yes, very true. But how will this Webb be launched? So Webb will be launched on an Ariane 5 ECA rocket. And the launch vehicle is also a part of the European contribution to the mission.
Yeah. And there's the question that comes to our mind, which is, why do we have to go to space at all? Like, can we not get this data with large telescope on the ground using the adaptive optics? So to answer that, the Earth's atmosphere is nearly opaque and glows brightly at most of the infrared wavelengths that Webb will observe. So a cold telescope in space is required. For those wavelengths that are transmitted to the ground, the Earth's atmosphere blurs the image and causes stars to twinkle. Currently, adaptive optics system can correct for this blurring only over small field of view near bright stars functioning as a reference beacons, allowing access to only a small fraction of the sky. So these artificial light beacons created with the strong lasers may provide better access to sky, but the technology to provide a wide field of view is still far in the future. So finding the earliest galaxy will require a very low foreground light levels, ultra sharp images over the largest area, and studies at many infrared wavelengths, a combination of observing conditions only available from space.
Wow. But you might be wondering, how long will this mission last, right? I mean, everything's supposed to end eventually. But the Webb is designed to have a mission lifetime of not less than 5.5 years after launch, with the goal of having a lifetime greater than 10 years. Lifetime is ultimately limited by the amount of fuel used for maintaining its orbit and by proper functioning in the orbit of the spacecraft and instruments. So JWST will carry fuel for a 10-year lifetime with margin, obviously, and the project will perform mission assurance testing of the flight system to guarantee at least 5 years of scientific operations starting at the end of the commissioning period, which takes place 6 months after the launch of this telescope.
Yeah, I guess we have to wait more 6 months. Yeah. Okay. So why this Webb is not serviceable like Hubble? So Hubble is in a low Earth orbit, located approximately 600 kilometers away from Earth, and it's therefore readily accessible for servicing. While Webb will be operated at the second Sun-Earth Lagrange point, located approximately 1.5 million kilometers away from Earth, and will therefore be beyond the reach of any crewed vehicle currently being planned for the next decade. And even if we could get out to the Webb, its design does not allow for instruments and other worn-out parts to be replaced, as they were when NASA crew visited Hubble in the space shuttle. And as Shweta said, Webb will have a fuel supply that should keep it stable in orbit for around 10 years. It's not completely out of question that its fuel tank could be topped up by a robotic craft at some point in future, but this prospect is not in the current plan.
Yes, that's right. But why not assemble this telescope in orbit, right? The ISS, which is the International Space Station, does not have the capability to assemble precision optical structures, and also space debris that resides around the space station could have damaged or even contaminated the Webb's optics. So Webb's deployment happens far above the low Earth orbit and the debris that is found there. So finally, if the space station were used, say, as a stopping point for observatory, we would have needed a second rocket in order to launch it to its final destination at L2 point. The observatory would have then to be designed with much more mass to withstand the second launch, leaving less mass for the mirrors and as well as the science instruments, which is essential in this case.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how big exactly the Webb is? So the most important size of a telescope, or to say the primary mirror, is at the heart of any telescope, right? So in this case, it is around 6.5 meter. This is about 2.75 times larger in diameter than Hubble. The Webb will have the mass of approximately 6,500 kgs, a little more than half the mass of Hubble. The largest structure of Webb will be in sunshade, which is must be able to shield the deployed primary mirror and the tower that holds the secondary mirror. The sunshade is approximately the size of a tennis court. Unbelievable, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a massive telescope, right?
Yeah.
So why does this sun shield have five layers rather than one thick one? My question, but to answer that, each successive layer of the sun shield is cooler than the one below. So heat radiates out from between the layers, and the vacuum between layers is a very good insulator. So one big thick sun shield would then conduct heat from the bottom to the top, more than five layers separated by vacuum.
Yeah, and how this telescope communicate with the scientists at the Earth? So the Webb will send data to Earth using high frequency radio transmitter. Large radio antennas that are part of NASA Deep Space Network will receive these signals and forward them to the Webb Science and Operations Center at the Space Telescope Science Institute in Maryland, USA.
But what happens after James Webb Telescope is launched, right? So what happens in the first hour is obviously the ride to space. And then we have the deployment of the solar array and what is known, and something that is known as free flight. In the first day, we have a mid-course correction to the Lagrange L2. In the first week, we have deployment of the sun shield. In the first month, we have the telescope deployment, a cool down, turning on of the instruments and insertion into orbit around the L2 point. And eventually in the second, third and fourth months, we'll have initial optics checkouts and alignment of telescope. And in the fifth and sixth months is when we have calibration in completion of the commission period. And after 6 months, we have science operations where, you know, people, scientists as well as the public, is open to use data obtained from this telescope.
Yeah, so now that we have seen launch, but how long it will take Webb to reach its orbit? So Webb will orbit around the second Lagrange point L2, which is around 1.5 kilometers away, already told you. And it takes about a month to travel this distance.
So Webb's operating temperature is less than 50 degrees above the absolute zero, that is 50 Kelvin. For Webb has a large shield that basically blocks light from the sun, the Earth, and obviously the moon, which otherwise would heat up the telescope and, you know, basically interfere with observations. So Webb will be placed in orbit around the sun at a very special location where its sun shield can block both the sun and the Earth all the time. So the L2, which is the second Lagrange point that Krishna has been talking about for so long, this point of the Sun-Earth system has this property. So L2 is a semi-stable point in the gravitational potential around the sun and the Earth. And this point lies outside the Earth's orbit, where it is going around the sun, keeping all three in a line at all times. So the combined gravitational forces of the sun and the Earth almost hold a spacecraft at this point, and it takes relatively little fuel to keep the spacecraft near this point. So the cold and stable temperature environment of the L2 point will allow JWST to make the very sensitive IR observations that is needed, essentially.
So there's this general question that comes to our mind that how can Webb's primary mirror be 6 times the size of Hubble's but be less massive? So there has been a lot of progress in technology since the Hubble was built. The best example of weight reduction is the primary mirror, which takes up considerable fraction of total observatory mass. The mirror has to be very accurately shaped. Any variation from the perfect shape of the mirror have to be less than a fraction of observing wavelength, which start at about 0.1 micrometer in the ultraviolet for Hubble and 0.6 micrometer in gold light for Webb. To understand this better, for comparison, the average thickness of a human hair is about 100 micrometers. So to keep the mirror in such a perfect shape, Hubble has a thick solid glass mirror with a mass around 1000 kg. Webb's mirror will consist of 18 thin lightweight beryllium mirror segments, which will be kept in the right shape and placed by a large number of adjusters attached to a stiff backing frame. Including the backing frame, the 18 segment of the Webb primary mirror total about 625 kg.
Wow, that sounds like a very intricate instrument, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why does Webb have a segmented unfolding primary mirror? Because Webb needs to have this kind of mirror because it is so large that it otherwise cannot fit in the launch shroud of currently available rockets. Mirror has to be large in order to see faint light from the first star forming regions and to see very small details at infrared wavelengths. Designing, building, and operating a mirror that unfolds is one of the major technological developments of this telescope. Unfolding mirrors will be necessary for future missions, requiring maybe even larger mirrors, and will find application in other scientific, civil, and military space missions.
Exactly. So what is Webb's angular resolution and how will its image compare to Hubble's? Will they be as beautiful? So to answer that, Webb's angular resolution or sharpness of vision will be the same as Hubble's, but in near infrared. This means that Webb images will appear just as sharp as Hubble's do. Webb will have an angular resolution of somewhat better than 0.1 arc second at a wavelength of 2 micrometers. So 1 degree equal to 60 arc minute, and it is equal to 3600 arc second. So seeing at a resolution of 0.1 arc second means that Webb could see details the size of US penny at a distance of about 24 miles, which is about 40 kilometers, or a regulation soccer ball at a distance of 340 miles, which is around 550 kilometers. So this angular resolution is the term astronomers use to describe the sharpness of an image. There are two factors that affect how sharp an image is: the diameter of mirror and the wavelength being observed. In fact, they are mathematically related. Dissolving ability is proportional to wavelength over diameter. So the shorter the wavelength and the bigger the diameter, the sharper your images will be.
That sounds amazing. But I think we need to, you know, look more into the kind of instruments that JWST uses, correct? So yeah. You can ask questions like, what kind of instruments will it have? Well, in fact, the JWST includes four scientific instruments. We have the near-infrared camera, which is also known as the NIRCam, near-infrared spectrograph, NIRSPEC, the mid-infrared instrument, and the fine guidance sensor, which is also known as the near infrared imager and slitless spectrograph. Wow, such fancy names, right, Krisha?
Yeah, true. So what kind of detectors will Webb have? So Webb will have two types of detector arrays, visible to near infrared arrays with 2048x2048 pixel and mid infrared arrays with about 1024x1024 pixels. So several detectors will be built into Mosaic to give a larger field of view, such as a near-infrared camera, near-infrared spectrograph and fine guidance sensor, and near-infrared imager and slitless spectrograph. We'll use mercury-cadmium telluride detectors made by Teledyne Scientific and Imaging, and mid-infrared instrument will employ arsenic-doped silicon detectors produced by Raytheon.
But it's also fancy, but what is the operating temperature of the telescope and the instruments? Because temperature is obviously a very important factor. So a large sunshade basically will protect the telescope from heating by direct sunlight, as described before, and this allows it to cool down to a temperature below 50 Kelvin by passively radiating its heat into space. Definition of Kelvin temperature scale is that 0 Kelvin is absolute zero, which is the lowest possible temperature. Water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 degrees Celsius, which is about 273 Kelvin. And the near infrared instruments, we have three of them, will work at about 39 degrees Kelvin through a passive cooling system. And the mid infrared instruments, which is only one, will work at a temperature of 7 Kelvin. And that will use a helium refrigerator or a cryo-cooler system.
Right. So we have been talking about mid-infrared instruments, near-infrared instrument. So why is Webb optimized for near and mid-infrared light? So the primary goal of Webb are to study galaxy, star, and planet formation in the universe. To see the very first stars and galaxies form in the early universe, we have to look deep into space to look back in time, because it takes light time to travel from there to here. The farther out we look, the further we look back in time, right? So the universe is expanding, and therefore the farther we look, the faster objects are moving away from us, redshifting the light. Redshift means that the light that is emitted as ultraviolet or visible light is shifted more and more to redder wavelength, into the near and mid-infrared part of the light spectrum for very high redshift.
Yes, and therefore to study the earliest star formations in the universe, we have to observe infrared light and use a telescope and instruments which is optimized for this light. Star and planet formation in the local universe takes place in the centers of the dense, dusty clouds, which are, you know, completely obscured from our eyes at otherwise normal visible wavelengths. Near infrared light with its longer wavelength is less hindered by these dust particles, allowing near infrared light to escape from the dust clouds. Observing this emitted light, we can then penetrate the dust and see the processes leading to star and planet formation, which is amazing. And objects of about, say, the Earth's temperature emit most of their radiation at mid-infrared wavelengths. These temperatures are also found in dusty regions where stars form and planets form eventually. So with mid-infrared radiation, we can see the glow of the star and planet formation taking place. How cool is that? And an infrared optimized telescope will therefore allow us to penetrate into these dust clouds in order to see the birthplaces of these cool stars and planets.
Yeah, and I guess that's why it has been called like it's a time machine and it will take us back to our origins.
Very true.
Yeah. So, but what about the visible light? So, the reflective surface on the web's mirror is gold. Although gold absorbs blue light, it reflects yellow and red visible light, and web's camera will detect that visible light.
Wow. But at which wavelengths will web observe, right? So, web will work from 0.6 to 28 micrometers. That is the wavelength range. And this ranges from visible gold-colored light through the invisible mid-infrared wavelength. The shorter wavelength end is set by the gold coating on the primary mirror, and the long wavelength cutoff is set by the sensitivity of the detectors in the mid-infrared instrument.
So how faint can Webb see? So Webb is designed to discover and study the first star and galaxies that formed in the early universe, as we talked about. To see these faint objects, it must be able to detect things that are 10 billion times as faint as the faintest star visible without a telescope. So this is around 10 to 100 times fainter than Hubble can see.
But building an instrument is one thing, but you also need to have science goals or aims associated with that instrument, isn't it? So
yeah.
When you look at what the goals or aim of the James Webb Telescope is, we can say there are four mission science goals. The first one being search for the first galaxies or luminous objects that formed after the Big Bang. Second mission goal is to determine how galaxies evolved from their formation until its present state. And the third one is JWST aims to observe the formation of stars from the first stages to the formation of planetary systems. And the final being measurement of physical and chemical properties of planetary systems and to investigate, investigate habitability or potential habitability of life in those systems, which is what I'm interested in.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. So how far will Webb look? So one of the main goals of Webb is to detect some of a very first star formation in the universe. This is thought to happen somewhere between redshift 15 and 30. At those redshifts, the universe was only 1 or 2% of its current age. Now, universe is 13.8 billion years old, and these redshifts correspond to 100 to 250 million years after the Big Bang. So the light from the first galaxies have traveled for about 13.6 billion years over a distance of 13.6 billion light years.
Wow. So I think you can also ask question like, will this telescope be able to see planets around other stars as well? To answer that question, yes. The Webb will be able to detect the presence of exoplanets around their host stars by using infrared light. So it will be able to see directly the reflected light of large planets the size of Jupiter, which are also known as hot Jupiters. And these hot Jupiters would basically be orbiting around their host stars. It will also be possible to see very young planets in formation while they're still hot. So the telescope will have a coronagraphic capability, which means it can help block out light of the parent star of the planets. So this helps the viewers, obviously us, the observers, to see planet formation and also to see the planet thanks to the blockage. This is needed because the parent star will be obviously millions of times brighter than the tiny planet orbiting it. So Webb will not have the resolution to see any details of the planet. It will only be able to detect a faint light speckle next to this huge bright parent star. So the telescope will also study planets that transit across their parent stars. So what do you mean by transiting planets? So transiting planets are essentially planets that, you know, pass in front of the star as they orbit around it. And when they pass in front of the star, they block partial light coming from the star. So we see a dip in the total brightness. So the amount of this brightness will tell us about the size, that is the radius of the planet. And Webb can even see starlight passing through the planet's atmosphere, which is known as transmission spectrum. So they're using a transmission spectrum. We can measure the planet's constituent gases and determine whether it has eventual liquid water on its surface. When the planet passes behind the star, the total brightness drops, which we get an emission spectrum, and we can once again determine more of the planet's characteristics.
Wow, that's amazing. So that was about exoplanet, but what about planets in our own solar system? So can Webb will able to observe them? So of course, yes, Webb can observe everything in our solar system that is further from the sun than the Earth is. So Webb sensitivity will be most useful in studying the faint, rocky and icy objects in far outer solar systems, including the dwarf planets Pluto and the other Kuiper belt objects. So Webb studies of these objects will test theories of how the solar system formed. Webb will also observe the moons of gas giant planets, comets and asteroids, and the planets like Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune.
But what will Webb's first targets be? I mean, it has so much to do. So what will be its first target? So the first target for Webb will be determined through a process which is similar to that used for the Hubble Space Telescope. And that will involve NASA, ESA, CSA, and scientific community participants who'd come together to discuss. The first engineering target will come before the first science target and will be used to align the mirror segments and focus the telescope. That will probably be a relatively bright star or possibly a star field.
Yeah. And the most anticipated question, I guess, is will it contribute to the dark matter research? So Webb cannot see dark matter, the unseen matter that makes up a large fraction of the mass of galaxies and cluster of galaxies. But Webb can measure its effects. So one of the best way to measure mass is through the gravitational lens effect. So Webb will observe many statistics of galaxy evolution, and scientists can compare these observations to theories of the role that dark matter played in that process, leading to some understanding of amount and nature of dark matter in galaxies.
That was amazing. But coming to the, say, let's say the final segment of this podcast or talk, what about the public? You know, where do we all come into the picture? So will you be able to see the web pictures? Yes, obviously. The public has access to many of the beautiful images of sky that Hubble has taken through the Hubble site website. And that website is maintained by STSCI, which is the Space Telescope Science Institute. Images in the gallery and the scientific results are also packaged into products for use by museums and also by teachers. So Hubble's scientific discoveries are explained in press releases as well. And similar to Hubble, Webb images and discoveries will also be made eventually public to all of us, to teachers, and to the press in the same way. We also have the same outreach team at the SDSI who will begin to support Webb in addition to Hubble after its launch. So don't worry, you guys will be able to see beautiful images and also have access to data.
Yeah, so, but will you be able to attend this Webb's launch? I guess we all have this excitement to, you know, see launch in our lifetime. And where this launch will be? Will it be in Florida? So no, guys, the Webb will launch from Ariane Space ELA-3 complex at European Spaceport located near French Guiana in South America. Webb will not launch from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The launch site in Kourou, the launch vehicle and the Ariane 5 rocket are part of European Space Agency contribution to the mission. Since the launch site is not NASA's and also due to its remote location, NASA is not unable to offer public viewing on site. But don't worry, guys, we can see through online streaming, right? So don't miss this beautiful launch.
Yes, that's true. Krisha is right. I mean, even if we cannot go and, you know, go to America and see this, we can still view it on their official website. So no worries. We just have to wait for the launch day now, right?
Exactly. So Webb is an outcome of thousands of scientists, engineers, and others who have told day and night to make it a reality. We hope all the efforts are paid off and Web has a smooth ride. So thank you guys for listening to the podcast with your host Krishna Bulchandani and Shweta Ramkumar. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. That's all for this episode, guys. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.